Hello, and welcome to another Care Home Management Magazine podcast. I'm Alan Rustad, and today we're discussing a topic of vital importance to the smooth running of any care home, and that is infection control and good hygiene. As ever, this podcast is kindly sponsored by RotaCloud, online software that makes managing your care team's rotas, timesheets, and annual leave easy. I'm delighted to welcome our two contributors today as we look at various aspects of infection control, and given the events of the last few years, what lessons have been learned. I have with me Fiona Millington. She's chief nurse at Florence, and from JLA, Robert Ackland. Well, thank you for joining me. Just before we get fully underway, to give our listeners a little bit more information about you both, would you perhaps, in just about 45 seconds or so, introduce yourselves and let us know a little bit more about your companies? So, Fiona, would you like to lead us off, please?
Good afternoon. My name is Fiona Millington. I'm chief nurse at Florence. We're a temporary staffing agency across the entire UK and also France, Canada, and potentially Germany. I'm the chief nurse, so I look after all things professional, governance and quality, and I help to make sure the nurses and the care assistants that we supply to care homes are of good quality and have got the right skills that they need to have to provide good, safe, quality care.
Thank you very much for that. And Robert from JLA, introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Robert Ackland from JLA. I'm our chief technology officer here, sort of overseeing our sort of digital and technology platforms at JLA and our more advanced product ranges. So at JLA, we work with around 4,000 care homes in the United Kingdom. We've been providing them with critical equipment for the last 50 years. What we've been doing over the last few years, is providing industry-leading infection control technology, particularly into our laundry machines, to try and reduce some of the intense pressure that care homes are under when it comes to infection control.
Good. Okay. Well, that's good to hear. We'll find out a bit more about that over the next few minutes as well. Let's begin, before we come on to talk about the various subjects that you want to talk about. I wonder, we've learned an awful lot, haven't we, through the pandemic. The last few years have been quite unlike any we've ever experienced before as far as care homes are concerned. I just wonder how what you've learned over the last 3 years has changed what you do in your everyday lives. Can I begin with you, Fiona?
Absolutely. Well, I think when the pandemic started in, the late 20s, 2020, we had to completely change the way we approached the temporary staffing services going into care homes. We were suddenly faced with unprecedented levels of infection that we didn't fully understand, that we weren't fully able to understand how to control. And I think a lot of it, certainly in the social care sector, was very much learning from what our colleagues in the NHS were experiencing. We know the story of the NHS, the movement of frail groups back into care homes very well. Care homes themselves were facing unprecedented levels of illness, both within their own population of residents, but also within their staff members, who were also very much aware of the need to self-isolate and shield from this unknown condition. And as an organisation, we were very aware of the fact that we needed to control the movement of temporary staffing, which is not something you need to think about normally, but we needed to start thinking about block booking. We needed to start thinking about transparency around whether people had got symptoms or not. We needed to start thinking about actively stopping people from working. So we were very much working in an incredibly different way to how we normally work, which is encouraging people to go into care homes and provide good care, and to move between care homes where the shifts were available. Suddenly we were sort of pulling back on all of that and really getting out there and talking to our nurses and our care assistants and also our care home managers. And we worked very, very closely and collaboratively with them during that time because they needed our support. Care home managers were working around the clock. They were really the unsung heroes, I think, of the pandemic because they they lived there. They lived in their care homes. They, you know, they were head cook and bottle washer and care assistant and nurse where they could be, the clock round. Many of them literally lived in their care homes for weeks to try and support the staff that were there and available to work, on top of the temporary staffing, the unknown care assistants and nurses that were coming into their homes to provide care. Of course, that's all settled down now. And we went through the, you know, the tremendous process of making sure that people were vaccinated where they could be or exempt if they were, to make sure all of that was transparent to care homes so they could make really sensible choices about who was coming in and out of their care homes. But essentially, you know, the temporary staffing population kept going to work, much like the NHS did, much like the social care group did. And so we saw agency nurses and agency carers become part of this wonderful group of people who were really, really supported and appreciated, which is in direct contrast to what agency nursing and care assistants are usually. You know, they're usually the last and least option when you've got vacancies. But at this time, they were really, really appreciated. Now, of course, things have settled down and care homes are, you know, this burden of COVID is still available, is still there in care homes, but it's much less and it's much better controlled than it has been of late. And of course, we've got the fail safes and the safeguards with the testing and the PPE and the knowledge that we didn't have, you know, 2-3 years ago.
Yes, I'm sure a lot of lessons have most certainly been learned. Robert, you're dealing more with equipment rather than people in a way, but how did all this situation affect you?
Well, I think, you know, whilst we deal with equipment, ultimately it does impact the people and the care that's given to the people and also the staff working there. I couldn't agree more with what Fiona's just said, actually. A huge, huge challenge. I think for me, the care sector has always had a strong interest in infection control. And I think what COVID has done has bringing that into sharp focus, you know, what can happen, that worst case scenario. And I think whilst, you know, the government and news outlets will say COVID is over, actually in the care environment, I'd say it's still very much in sharp focus. So, you know, all procedures and processes change quite dramatically to stem it. I mean, care homes are in a very unique position. You know, in workplaces, you could send people home and work from home. Schools, you could homeschool, or at least there was some respite from the situation. Care homes were not in that situation. And so they had to be super careful and put as many preventative measures in place. And we saw a huge spike in things like room sanitizers being purchased during that time. But I think in the sort of post-COVID world, what we're seeing is people being a lot more open-minded to more advanced infection control technologies that can start to reduce back this burden and get care homes back to that sort of more person-centric care that they really want to be delivering. So in particular, you know, JLA, we have quite a big interest in laundry. We're seeing quite a big uptick in people interested in things like ozone disinfection technology, not only actually because of the sort of post-COVID fallout, but also I think the subsequent rise in energy costs as well has sort of driven that up as well. So we have seen quite changing behaviour, but I think a much more open-minded sector as a result of coming out the other side of COVID in terms of technologies that they're interested in adopting and solutions they're interested in looking at.
Okay, well, we'll talk more about that in a few moments' time. Let me come back to Fiona's subjects, because let's look at staffing, first of all, which is, I think, where you come from at Florence to a large extent. And you mentioned before how team spirit had really been engendered during that COVID period. Now that we're here in 2023, is that still there? Is that team spirit still there? Or have we gone back to looking at staffing as or at least temporary staff as just being people who come in and fill holes?
I think a little bit of both. Temporary staffing is essentially people who come in and fill holes in the gaps, you know, gaps in those work rotas. I think the issue with temporary staffing is that it will always be a very transient population. But I think the sort of the the experiences that we had collectively together in COVID has made people realise how important this part of the industry is. And that it's no surprise, you know, we lost an awful lot of our healthcare workforce during the pandemic in terms of them leaving to do other things. And we still now have unprecedentedly high levels of vacancies in social care. I think 155,000 vacancies across the NHS and social care organisations, industry, means that there will always be a need for temporary staffing. The important thing is that we have a level of control about who is going into that care home, so that home managers and people in charge of those care homes have always got that assurance that A, they know who these people are, and B, they have the confidence that these people are skilled and understand rigorously things like infection prevention and control, because that is the bedrock. That is the fundamental basis of caring for a vulnerable, frail population who are very, very, very much at risk of getting infections and having that high mortality associated with things that don't normally cause, you know, serious illness in the younger population. So in terms of infection prevention, the temporary staffing industry is always going to be a part of that. Our role in Florence is to make sure that they're well trained and people have got that assurance that the quality is there and the knowledge is there, so that they can safely leave their care homes in the care of nurses and care assistants that are coming in that aren't part of their permanent workforce.
And have you had to step up your training or alter your training in any way to cope with that?
We definitely did. We were one of the very first, actually. We have an academy at Florence, which is for predominantly for use of our internal nurses and carers that work with us, but also available to anybody else that wants to use it. But we were one of the very first to write a COVID module so that we could provide people with a very, very good and rigorous understanding of what this illness was, what this disease was, its originations, what the treatment was, what the recommendations were. And because we work across regulators, we, you know, work across the Care Inspectorate and the RQIA and the CQC, there was all sorts of slightly different advice coming out. The advice in Scotland was slightly different to the advice in England, to the advice in Wales. So we had to be very mindful of the fact that we were sort of across a wide range of cultures. But yes, it is mandatory that all of our nurses and care assistants at that time had completed the COVID module and also had completed the infection prevention module, which is standard practice and mandatory training for anybody providing healthcare services.
And Robert, as far as you're concerned with regulation, was that something that you had to take on board as well?
We certainly take a view that we should be helping people manage their regulatory requirements. You know, so in the laundry in particular, there are very specific requirements for disinfection. What we're trying to do is deploy technology to make it simpler to actually comply with these regulations. You know, our view and my view as sort of CTO of this organization is that technology should make everyone's lives easier, shouldn't make it more complicated, shouldn't make it difficult, shouldn't be huge barriers. And so what we've put in place is things that are just more helpful. So for example, anyone sort of managing a care home now can start to understand the mix of cycles that's happening in their laundry through technology, so that they can understand, you know, are we doing the right mix? Are we disinfecting enough? Are we disinfecting too much? Because you can go too far the other way, which can be very, very costly as well. So really trying to help out there with technology. I think the other aspect to sort of meeting regulatory requirements, you know, one, we provide sort of bespoke standard cycles, which will ensure disinfectant from a thermal standpoint, but also we offer OTEX technology as an alternative to disinfecting. And that makes it very, very straightforward. You know, anyone that's operating the laundry can just, you know, hit a button and know that things are going to come out in a compliant way. And obviously we then provide the tracking so that management can ensure that that does happen.
That's good to hear. And coming back to you, Fiona, on in terms of the feedback you're getting from the staffing that you're providing to care homes. When they finish at a care home, they come back, do they give you feedback on this care home is doing it right, or that care home is a bit lax, that kind of thing?
Yeah, definitely. We certainly saw an awful lot of that during the height of the pandemic, because we had a lot of our own nurses and care assistants who were providing care at home for relatives who may have been shielding, and they were very mindful. So we were able, using technology, we were very able to show all of our workers whether a care home was declaring that they had a COVID outbreak or whether they were clear, because part of our management was that we didn't want a nurse or a care assistant moving from a COVID home to a non-COVID home. You know, we really had to be very, very responsible around the transparency that we had around these care homes. And we asked for them to be transparent with us. So we would often get care assistants or nurses coming to us saying, oh, you know, I turned up at this care home, I thought it was COVID free. They've got COVID, they've got an active COVID outbreak. I couldn't work, I couldn't stay because I'm caring for a sick child or a sick parent. And you'll remember in the very early days that there was this challenge around the availability of PPE. So a lot of people would come back to us saying, oh, we haven't got enough PPE, there are no aprons, there are no gloves. And of course, all of that got sorted out and the availability became better. And so the noise and the rhetoric around that sort of naturally slowed down. We still now get occasionally, you know, I turn to put a care home and there's an active COVID outbreak, because we still ask our care homes to inform us when there's an outbreak so that we can share that with our temporary staff, and they can make that decision about whether it's safe for them to go in or whether they choose not to, particularly if they're transferring to another care home. Our recommendations remain the same. We try and stop people from moving around too much, because obviously that wide movement encourages the transfer of infection, whether it's COVID or norovirus or flu or anything that sort of comes along at various stages in the year. So, but I would say the noise, the real noise and rhetoric around care homes not complying or with having poor infection control practices is very small. We don't hear an awful lot of that. And our nurses and care assistants do tend to come very freely to us and let us know where things are not going well.
And as far as guidance goes from the statutory bodies, CQC you mentioned before, government indeed, is that guidance now understood, accepted and considered to be the way forward, or are we still in the world of mixed messages?
No, I think the messaging is clear. The one thing I would say is that there's still a reluctance to let go of the masks when there was all of that noise around we don't like wearing them and they're horrible and they're not very good. There are still some people that do choose to wear a mask. And I think the guidance around that is clear. If there's good reason to wear a mask, or you're required to wear a mask because you're actively caring for somebody with a COVID type illness, then that's fine. I think the general requirement to wear a mask is it's clear that that's gone. I think what's happened is people, the public included, have become much more averse about the importance of good hand hygiene, hand washing techniques. You know, when I stand in the train station in Luton, not Luton, in Euston, and I watch people in the toilets washing their hands, they do that a lot better than they used to. There's a lot more of it. But I think in care homes, I think it's now very much embedded in the general population about the importance of infection prevention. We have to have such a heightened awareness. People have done this huge amount of training, their knowledge is much, much better than it probably was pre-pandemic. People understand the consequences of poor infection prevention, and it hit the care homes, you know, really badly. So I think a huge amount of learning is still embedded and still in practice.
Oh, and is that, do you think, still just a temporary phase, or are we going to keep that going? You know, another couple of years, will standards lapse a little bit?
I hope not. I haven't seen any evidence of that yet. And you know, the conversations I've had with some of our larger clients, their view and their focus on infection prevention is as strong as it ever was. I think, you know, having sustainable processes and good systems of infection prevention in place is essential. Training is very important. Remember, during COVID, face-to-face training of infection prevention was reduced because you literally couldn't go out and get external trainers in. So people had to learn to be really good at what they do and then be able to train other people within the organisation. So I'm confident that those standards will remain. Look, there's always going to be care homes and other organisations, NHS included, where, you know, standards will lapse for whatever reason. But I think the focus is there. I think we've learned a very strong lesson. And I think that I'm confident that that lesson is maintained.
And do you think we're largely through this now? I mean, we could find another pandemic coming down the track, of course, but are we through the worst of this and that we can now begin to open up, begin to look upon the future, leaving aside the financial problems, but look upon the future with some degree of optimism?
I think so. Yeah, I think so. I think certainly the numbers of care homes that are reporting to us that they have COVID-19 in situ are much, much, much lower. And there doesn't seem to be the excitement or the fear around COVID-19 that there was, you know, even a year ago. I think people are confident that there are systems for treating it. I think people are, you know, confident in the vaccines and enthusiastic about making sure they have their vaccines. I don't really understand why the flu vaccine isn't, that people aren't quite so enthusiastic about that, but the COVID vaccine certainly does seem to be something that people are happy to queue up to have. And yes, I do think people now, you go into shops and it's unusual to see people wearing masks, whereas, you know, even 18 months ago, it was unusual if you weren't wearing a mask. So, yeah, I do think people are beginning to relax a little bit and feel less frightened. Obviously, if they're living with a complex illness, or, you know, they're caring for somebody with a complex illness, an illness that requires them to, you know, take extra care and precautions, then I think for that population, I think any infection is going to be a concern.
You're listening to the Care Home Management Magazine podcast.
Providing the best quality care means having the right people in the right place at the right time. And that's exactly where Rotacloud can help. Rotacloud makes managing your care team's rotas, attendance, and annual leave easy. With its simple drag-and-drop planner, you'll be creating rotas in minutes, while its built-in budgeting tools mean you'll know exactly how much you're spending on staffing before sending the rota out. It could even help you reduce your agency bill. Start your 30-day free trial today by visiting rotacloud.com/CHM and see how much easier organising your care team can be.
Let's move on then to look at the technological side of things with Robert, because I think, you know, JLA have always embraced technology, no question about that, and you've provided it for care homes. When you go into care homes and produce the technology that makes life better, what's first in their mind? Is it the finance, and one could understand why that would be, or is it still the post-COVID effects of making sure that they get it right?
I think it is a combination of both. Following up from what Fiona said, I think there's a heightened awareness from the general public and relatives when selecting a care home. So I think there's a high burden on care homes, irrespective of, you know, whether we're still in pandemic or out of it, to demonstrate better practice and best practice, just from a sort of ensuring that everybody has peace of mind. So that is still very strongly there. And I think that's going to be there for a generation. I think everyone's going to be scarred until we reach a point where everyone's forgotten. So I think that's going to be a longstanding thing where anyone that's managing or operating a care home is sort of, yes, we need to really focus on this. I think the secondary thing is the sort of post-pandemic energy crisis that we've had, which again is driving adoption of different technologies or heightened interest in adopting technology. A great example is, and I've mentioned before, our JLA OTEX technology. So this is quite a simple technology. It uses a natural ozone gas to disinfect instead of thermal. And One, it's quite simple and easy to use, but two, it massively reduces the energy consumption to meet that compliance and best practice. And at the moment, with some care homes seeing their bills tripling, that's quite a benefit in terms of reducing their cost. I think the other angle that's sort of driving particularly the larger groups at this stage, but I think it's going to get phased down to smaller care home groups, is the requirement to report on environment, social, and governance factors. So demonstrating something like using innovative technologies to reduce the energy and carbon footprint of your care home or care home estate is something that's quite valuable. And just to sort of paint a picture around this, one care home customer that's been using OTEX, also using our connected technology, which I think we can talk about in another thing, another part. They're saving sort of over £900 a month on utility bills as a result of putting in OTEX. So they're really tangible savings that they're seeing. So it's infection control led, but also there's that big energy element that's become quite dominant recently.
Well, let's look at that technology, because clearly if it's saving money and all, is it also, can you reassure your clients that it's still doing the job that it needs to do in terms of infection control?
Yes. So it kills 99.999% of harmful bacteria, including coronavirus, and that's been independently verified. So it is as effective as thermal disinfectants. Also, around that, we have formal validation as well, so that you get the cycle is a validated cycle. You get confirmation of that validated cycle as well. So there's absolute confirmation that you have that level of disinfection from that ozone cycle, because it's a chemical injection process that we can control and measure levels of. We can quite confidently say that we have achieved the level of disinfection that's required.
And Fiona, from your point of view, from people that you put into care homes, the subject of laundry, I would imagine that crops up quite a bit, doesn't it, in terms of hygiene and infection control?
Definitely, particularly around their own uniforms. So, the importance of wearing a clean uniform to every shift, and to making sure that you don't travel in your uniform, and that you don't, leave the care home once you've worked in your uniform. It was all part of the standard precautions that we took when we were at the height of the pandemic. But, people are, as you rightly say, Robert, it's about the energy crisis. It's that people are looking now and saying, do I really have to wash my laundry on 60 degrees? Because actually if 20 degrees is enough to, not really pay very much money for it, then that's what I'm going to do. And is that effective in getting rid of, potential infection, bugs and stuff that are actually sitting naturally on that uniform? So I think it's certainly something that's very much at the forefront of people's minds, what's the lowest temperature I can get away with? Because it's simply related to the cost of, keeping my uniform clean.
And I should imagine you've had an education job to do with your people, haven't you? Because they've been well used to washing their uniforms in 60 degrees. If you tell them it's all right at 20, they may have some doubts, I would imagine.
Most definitely. And it depends on what detergent you use. And but the standard practice is you should wash your uniform in as hot a wash as it can possibly stand. And I think we've got some work to do around raising awareness of, a different approach. But we need the research and we need the evidence behind it, which is, which it's so important for us to have.
That's where you come in, isn't it?
Yeah, I think we've had the whole consumer detergent industry convincing us that washing at low temperatures is the smart thing to do. But I think when you get into the care home environment, it's very different. One, you need the right equipment. A domestic machine actually will not in any way guarantee thermal disinfection. There's a lot of degrees of freedom that in a commercial machine you will not get. With the commercial machines we supply are very precise in terms of the temperatures they reach, how long they reach them for. We ensure there's adequate mixing times, so on and so forth. So it's very, very different. And you're quite right. The detergents that you use in these commercial machines are a different grade of detergent to ensure that you get that correct level of, one, visible cleanliness, which is important, from a care home perspective. Residents don't want things that look grubby, even if they are, chemically clean. but also reaching that level of disinfection. So it is really, really important that care homes do have the right equipment and that it is used correctly as well.
And you at JLA can keep an eye on all this while in real time, can't you? You can follow how a wash is going at Care Home A and perhaps even phone up Care Home B and say, you need to twist this a bit or whatever is needed.
Absolutely. So all our total care laundry machines now come with remote monitoring. That has a few benefits, actually. So particularly in smaller care homes that don't have room for lots of equipment, don't have much sort of redundancy in their laundry room, a machine breaking is actually quite problematic. You can end up with quite a difficult situation from an infection control management in that situation. Because of the remote monitoring, it means that we can actually get that machine up and running as quickly as possible. We'll typically know about it before the customer does, and we can have an engineer on the road ready to go out there. Doesn't happen very often, by the way, because these commercial machines are pretty rock solid. But when it does happen, we do respond to it very quickly. But equally, we can replay back one to the care home manager or anyone that is operationally responsible exactly what was run, and they can look at that. But equally, we also look at the cycles being run. If we think that there are discrepancies or issues versus how we think that machine should be being operated in that environment, we will give that customer a call, find out what's going on, find out whether they need any assistance in getting things working and up to scratch. The other thing we've been very proactive on recently is looking at homes doing significant amounts of thermal washes and just sort of exploring whether OTEX might be a better solution for them and saving them a bit of money as well. So not just providing equipment, but hopefully offering a bit of a helping hand in just operating the home a bit more efficiently and effectively as well.
Well, it's nice that we've got that extra efficiency and those extra options coming forward. Just to wind things up, let me ask both of you, because of there obviously is money involved in terms of what people are paying Florence for staff to come in terms of what people are paying JLA for the technology they're getting. As a result of COVID, do you find that managers are perhaps more laissez-faire with as regards money? They know money's tight. They want money, value for money, but they are prepared at least to pay it to make sure they get what they need. Fiona, first of all, in terms of staffing.
I think the care home sector's always really watched their budgets and their finances very closely. In my experience, actually, not a lot has changed. I think they still want value for money. They're right to expect value for money. They are, you know, very quick to challenge where they don't believe that they've had value for money. And temporary staffing is not a cheap option. It is an expensive option because generally you have to pay for last minute workers to come into your care home. But no, I don't believe they're laissez-faire at all. I think constantly, you know, they are looking at the rates that they pay. They're looking at the margins. They're looking at how they can get, you know, top dollar and top workers for that. And no, I think they're continuing to manage their budgets in a very strict and coordinated way.
While keeping their homes safe, obviously.
While keeping their home absolutely safe. And I think that's probably one of the most important points, is that they want people who are, you know, they're not known to them. So they're very reliant on the fact that as an organisation, Florence will provide assurance that the person coming in is who they say they are, they're qualified, and we verified that they've got a right to work, and they've got the knowledge and skills to do that. And you know, it's the least we can do is to provide them with people who do that. Over and above that, they want people to come in and do a really good job. And that's what we want to.
And Robert, from your perspective, with some expensive machinery nonetheless, but you're in a position to explain in really sort of pounds, shillings and pence just how much saving they can make for an initial investment.
Yeah, so Fiona's absolutely right. The care sector has always been driven by value. And I don't think that's changed, but I think the things that the care homes are deriving value out of now has changed slightly. So there is a willingness, you know, Fiona mentioned sort of, you know, peace of mind in terms of knowing that the member of staff is going to be really high quality. I think they're deriving more value out of that peace of mind. And I think the same thing comes from, you know, a piece of laundry equipment from JLA, for example. You know, you're not just buying the laundry equipment, you're buying peace of mind. And there is a value attached to that, which has become more tangible over the course of the pandemic. I think the other thing is, you know, from a JLA perspective, we try and make it as easy as possible. We know that, you know, significant amounts of capital outlay are just not something that a small care home can do. You know, the machines that we put out there, they're premium bits of equipment. They cost a lot of money. So, you know, through our total care plan, we try and roll that into a single monthly payment that just includes everything. So total peace of mind, you get a premium piece of equipment that you probably couldn't have bought outright without, you know, significant pain. You get the SLAs, you get the connectivity, you get the option of adding OTEX to it, and you get us just generally taking care of that whole situation. And our sort of view on that is that, you know, care home managers, people working in care homes, they've got a lot to do and a lot to focus on in terms of the well-being of the people they're caring for. The last thing they want to be worried about is who's going to come in to fix the washing machine. So I think, you know, we try and make it as low cost as possible on a monthly basis, so not a big capex outlay. We try to deliver as much peace of mind, and we see that being valued far more greatly in the care sector now.
And on that note, we'll bring matters to a close. That's all we have time for, I'm afraid, today. But many thanks to Robert Ackland at JLA and Fiona Millington from Florence. You've been listening to the Care Home Management Magazine podcast on infection control, kindly sponsored by Rotacloud, online software that makes managing your care team's rotas, timesheets, and annual leave easy. I hope you've enjoyed our discussion today. We've more podcasts lined up for you in the weeks ahead, so look out for those. But for now, stay safe, and it's goodbye from me.